chapter 9 of the first canto is passing it down by Bhishma Dev. And in the verse, it's just from opening the book at random, the verse is describing the affection that Krishna has for his devotee. In this case, it's grandfather Bhishma. The scene is chapter 9. Grandfather Bhishma is being visited by the Pandavas because he's on the battlefield. His body pierced through and through and through so many arrows that he's lying on a bed of arrows. And they come for the time of Grandfather Bhishma's passing. Because Grandfather Bhishma received a benediction from his father, Maharaj Santanu, that he need not die unless he chose the time of leaving his body. Grandfather Bhishma himself was very, very powerful, even in terms of mystic power, because just consider, his body was finished, but he was able to, upon fixing his mind, release the soul from the body. Sometimes people, when there is so much pain, physical pain, they don't even know, some relative or some person, somebody's family member, I know some people like this, they were in so much pain. They were pleading with their relatives, let me go. Too much pain. They can't just at their will go. But Grandfather Bhishma at his will could just give up his body. There are yogis that have that capacity. Dadichi was another person who had that capacity. Lord Vishnu, when King Indra had lost his kingdom, Lord Vishnu told Lord Indra, go to Dadichi, a great sage, and ask Dadichi for his bones. And with the bones of Dadichi, take those bones to Vishvakarma. And Vishvakarma, using the bones of Dadichi, can fashion a thunderbolt that can kill Dhritarashtra. So they went to Dadichi, Lord Indra, and the host of demigods, in order to regain their kingdom. And just at his will, Dadichi gave up his body, achieved a transcendental destination, and then they took the bones of Dadichi to Vishvakarma, and he had his thunderbolt weapon. When Indra asked Dadichi for his bones, Dadichi said, Indra, how can you ask such a thing? Don't you know what is the dearmost thing to everyone's life? Their body. Of course, Dadichi wasn't attached to his body. But it's true, most people are attached to their body. But even when it's attached to the body, one can't accept the body or give up a body at will. It's by force of the modes of nature. The laws of nature are controlling our circumstances of life. But by mystic power, Bhishma could give up his body at will. And otherwise not. So, the Pandavas came to the scene of Grandfather Bhishma's departure. But Grandfather Bhishma, rather than being concerned about his own departure, was concerned about seeing the morose condition of Yudhisthira. So he pacified Yudhisthira. After the whole Kurukshetra battle had been fought, he was blaming himself for the loss of the lives of so many soldiers and so much devastation. After being pacified, by Grandfather Bhishma, and Grandfather Bhishma convincing Yudhisthira that Yudhisthira should rule the kingdom. This was Krishna's plan. And all of this, very difficult to understand arrangement. One thing is very clear, Krishna wanted you to rule, not Duryodhana. So now, as Krishna planned it, you should rule. So Yudhisthira said very well, I should rule. Please describe to me how I can perform my duty as king. There is Grandfather Bhishma on his deathbed giving a Srimad Bhagavatam class to Maharaj Yudhisthira on how to perform the duties of a king. That's very instructive because the duty of the king is to see that everyone is engaged properly in their religious duty. So he then described the Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra's duties in detail. And Vanaprastha, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas duties in detail. So sometimes if you have this question, what are my duties as a Grihastha? Just read Bhishma Parva of Mahabharata. You'll find out duties of your position as a Grihastha, or as a Kshatriya, or as a Brahmana, or as a Vaishya. Even more detail described in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam. So he just gave that description, and as he was describing, days were passing, and the time of Makara Sankranti came, where the sun made its movement beginning in the northerly direction. Sun makes its path once every year around the Earth planet from the northern hemisphere to the southern hemisphere, then again heading into the northern hemisphere in 1 year's time. So now Grandfather Bhishma is in this position where he stopped his external duties of life and he focused entirely upon his internal duty of life. Now during our present condition, we're to do both. We're not just to do our external duties. We are to do our external duties, but not just that. We're also to inwardly cultivate fixing our consciousness upon the Supreme. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, perform your prescribed duty and what else? Always think of me. So in our life in Krishna consciousness, I'll say it again, we have our external, but we also have our internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is not just a series of behaviors. Should be obvious, but sometimes we think it is. Who's a devotee? A devotee is one who wears tilak, and they come to the temple in the dhoti and kurta, and they pay their obeisance. There's this behavior, that behavior, and that's a devotee. Devotees do this behavior, that behavior, and they refrain from certain other kinds of behaviors. But that's the external part that a devotee should do. And then there's the internal part. And what's the internal part? Always think of Krishna. How do you always think of Krishna when you have to do so many duties that aren't at all apparently connected to thinking of Krishna? Like you men who go to the office, the assignment, the supervisor in your office, in your workplace, gives you isn't sit in your workplace and think of Krishna. That's not the assignment. The assignment is to do something. But the unspoken part that is spoken in Bhagavad Gita is, and always think of Krishna. Always think of Krishna. You can think of Krishna, you're doing what you do for Krishna. Like some ladies may be in the office, but they also may be in their home doing cooking. And they can be thinking, I'm cooking for my family. But that's not the cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Cultivation of Krishna consciousness is, well, I'm doing the service for Krishna. My family members are provided for me by Krishna as parts and parcels of Krishna for me to serve in this particular religious manner as the wife and mother of my husband and my children. Do for Krishna, as those who are working are supposed to be also doing for Krishna, the internal cultivation. The Bhishma Dev is like the example of Bhagavad Gita of the tortoise, where the tortoise has the capacity of extending his limbs, but he can also withdraw his limbs. Extend the limbs and withdraw the limbs is upon the will of the individual. So the extending of the senses into the field of activity for service to Krishna, withdrawing the limbs from the field of activity and consolidating consciousness, this is what Bhishma Dev is doing now. He is consolidating his consciousness completely upon Krishna. His duties are gone. He was doing his duty to, as the grandfather of the Pandavas, to protect them in the absence of Pandu. He was giving moral instruction. He was training them their duties of life. He arranged for Drona to be their military teacher, and so on. He was doing all the duties of a father, although he wasn't their father. He was performing that duty. And Kshatriya duty, and so many duties, down to this training of Yudhishthira how to be the king. Then he withdrew his senses and left just the one remaining activity, completely consolidating, focusing consciousness upon Krishna. So it's a very nice section. It's a very advanced stage of Krishna consciousness. It's not for us at this time because we're to do our duties and think of Krishna. So that our senses become purified by using them in Krishna's service. Intelligence becomes purified by contemplating the instructions of Bhagavad Gita and the scripture. But the internal function of the mind can then reach its fulfilled stage. The culmination is by this meeting this moment of death, which we'll all have to face, with the mind completely focused upon Krishna. And Vishnu is exhibiting that. So he's giving some descriptions of the glories of that person who his mind is fixed upon. Why have I fixed my mind upon Krishna? And he's giving the reasons. O King, Lord Shiva, Narada, the saint among the demigods, and Kapila, the incarnation of Godhead, all know very confidentially about his glories through direct contact. O King, that personality whom, out of ignorance only, you thought to be your maternal cousin, your very dear friend, well-wisher, counselor, messenger, benefactor, etc., is that very personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. This year, and Krishna were cousins. Yudhisthira's mother and Krishna's father were brother and sister. They were cousins. So Yudhisthira, he's instructing him. This person standing right there, who you thought to be your cousin, your benefactor, your dear friend, your messenger, sometimes Krishna did that role of carrying him, become the message carrier. He guarded the Pandavas one night. He stayed awake while they were resting, just to protect them. Took the role of a menial chariot driver of Arjuna. But he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Being the Absolute Personality of Godhead, he is present in everyone's heart. He was equally kind to everyone, and he is free from all false ego of differentiation. Therefore, whatever he does is free from material inebriety. He is equibalanced. Yet despite his being equally kind to everyone, he has graciously come before me while I'm ending my life, for I am his unflinching servitor. So out of all these different glories, Grandfather Bhishma is pointing to one that is considered perhaps his most glorious quality, and that is Bhaktivatsala. Krishna places himself, he's so affectionate upon his devotees that he places himself at the beck and call of his devotees. He places himself in a position subordinate to the desires of those who he's serving, those who are serving him and his desires. It's a contradiction. But it's due to the loving nature of Krishna. The glorification is the loving nature of Krishna. Just repeat what Bhishma has said. He appears to be one of us, but he's not one of us, Yudhisthira. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That means, Supreme Personality of Godhead means Aham Sarvasya Prabhago Matak Sarvam Pravartate. It means that Krishna is the source of everything. Matak Parataram Nanyat Kinchit Asti Dhananjaya. There is no truth that is superior to Krishna. In this sense, truth means source of existence, because the absolute truth, by Vedic definition, the absolute truth is that from which everything else comes. Janmat yasya yataha. Ganta Sutra aphorism. The absolute truth is that from which everything else emanates. So someone might say, that's very nice. That from which everything emanates is God. Where does God come from? Heard that one before. God is the source of everything. So where does God come from? That's called a rhetorical question. But my dear sir, by definition, whatever it is, which is that from which everything else comes, does not have a source, by definition. So if you ask, what is the source of that from which everything else emanates, which has no source, the answer is it has no source. The absolute truth is not subordinate or relative to any other truth. We just heard Bhishma Deva describe Krishna as that absolute truth. And he who is standing right here is that absolute truth. And although he's standing before us, he's also within the heart of everyone. But let me tell you something even more glorious than he's the absolute truth and he's in the heart of everyone. And that is, those who are his unflinching servitors, that same absolute truth, if they just beckon him, he will come. And they don't even have to beckon him, because I didn't ask Krishna to come. But he takes this desire to see Krishna upon leaving this body, and Krishna came. He's so affectionate that he's bound by the love of his devotee. Of course, you've all heard this, because it's an essential teaching in Srimad Bhagavatam. But now it's being described in this particular circumstance by such an authority, Grandfather Bhishma. And he's personally experiencing it. And tears are coming from his eyes as he's appreciating. The great, great mighty warrior, Bhishmadev, the great hero, Maharathi, is crying out of appreciation of the affection of Krishna for his devotees. Here's what Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport. The Supreme Lord, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, although equal to everyone, is still more inclined to his unflinching devotees, who are completely surrendered and know no one else as their protector and master. Having unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord as one's proprietor, friend, and master is the natural condition of eternal life. A living entity is so made by the will of the Almighty that he is most happy when facing himself in a condition of absolute dependence. My dear devotees, this is a contradiction. In material life, one of the things that one is trained by words and by experience is don't be dependent on anybody. The Wild West out here is famous for it. The American spirit is value independence. Don't be dependent. Now, that runs contrary to a devotional spirit. Because a devotional spirit says, be dependent upon Krishna. At the same time, you're doing that, do so with independent thoughtfulness. That's a contradiction. In other words, don't be a blind follower. A blind follower where you don't think anything. Like a... close the door. Three engineers can close the door. How many engineers does it take to close it? So,
software engineers.
Software engineers. The living entity, by constitution, has independence. We have independence because we're part and parcel of the Supreme, who is supremely independent. The material condition is the consequence of misuse of our independence. The spiritual condition results in, or is the result in proper use of our free will, our independence, brings about our spiritual condition of life. But once having misused our independence, the tendency to continue misusing independence is very strong. Very strong. Very strong. So, those who have again reinstated their proper use of their independence, that attracts Krishna. Krishna means the all-attractive. Krish, the syllable Krish, means to attract. And Na is derived from the same anand, or spiritual happiness. There's a spiritual happiness that comes from the all-attractive Krishna. He attracts in that way of happiness, not out of punishment or fear, but out of his attractiveness. And Krishna is the sum total of all attractiveness. And he who is the sum total of all attractiveness becomes attracted by the love of his devotee. So, devotion is very powerful. Therefore, our process of devotional services, likewise, very powerful. It's very powerful if it's used in the proper way. It's also very powerful in a detrimental way if used in an imitation way or a wrong way. It's a bring disservice to others to take the process of devotional service and distort it. When the process of devotional service is distorted, Krishna is not present. But when the process of devotional service is properly rendered, Krishna is present. Krishna is attracted. There's one very beautiful prayer that Krishna speaks. You know that section where the Adi Purana, where Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, one who claims to be my devotee, is not my devotee. But one who is the devotee of my devotee, that's my devotee. In that section, it's very much like Bhagavad Gita or the 11th canto of Krishna speaking to Uddhava, Uddhava Gita, as if it's in the Adi Purana. Krishna speaking to Arjuna. In that section, Krishna says, some people say that I can be contacted, I'm present wherever great Vedic sacrifices are performed. Because through the process of sacrifice, one, what's the purpose? The purpose is to satisfy Vishnu, and those persons are very expert in that. That's what they want. They want to contact Krishna, or through great learning, or through great austerity, or sacrifice. Krishna says, I'm not there. But wherever my devotees gather and hear and chant my glories, I am to be found within their hearts. I can be found in that circumstance. He's declaring how we can contact him. Vishnudeva is also. The opposite, here we continue in the purport. The opposite is to be in a fallen state. The opposite tendency is the cause of fall down. The living entity has this tendency of falling down by dint of misidentifying himself as fully independent to lord it over the material world. The root cause of all troubles is there in false egotism. One must draw towards the Lord in all circumstances. What the Bhagavad Gita is describing. As with Grandfather Bhishma, all the devotees of the Lord, he points to Srimati Radharani and the gopis. And Nanda Maharaj and Mother Jasoda. Krishna performs leelas where he's hiding from Mother Jasoda. But the love of Mother Jasoda enables her to find Krishna. When Krishna left the rasa dance, he was hiding from the gopis. You know this nice description. He decided when they were becoming mad, literally mad in their mood of separation from Krishna, he stood in the middle of the forest in his forearm, Narayan form. The gopis came running. Lord Narayan, please accept our obeisances. You are the all-knowing Supreme Lord. Surely you must know which way has Krishna gone. When Bridge Bossing description is with his forearms, he pointed in four different directions and said, Krishna went this way. That's the Dina Bandhu version. Smiled. But when Radharani came and he was showing his forearms, because of the love, intense love of Srimati Radharani, even if it was Krishna's will to show his forearmed form, his love, her love compelled him to show only his two-armed form. And Radha was again with Krishna. Love of the devotee is so compelling. Now that's Srimati Radharani and it's not us. But with us, the lesson is, what is our qualification to attract Krishna? We don't have qualification to attract Krishna. We have disqualification. Too much disqualification. We're troubled. all the time by our disqualification. But by somehow getting some mercy to engage in some devotional service for Krishna, even very simple, menial service to Krishna, even the most simple of things, Krishna becomes indebted to that devotee. I'll tell one Prabhupada story, two Prabhupada stories, and end with it, just to illustrate. During one stretch of time in my devotional service, I was the Sankirtan leader. And for like several years, we had this wonderful experience of in the temple were 150 devotees in our Brooklyn temple. Full-time residing in the temple devotees, 150 devotees. This was before the Manhattan building was in the Brooklyn temple, 150 devotees. God was my sole job to engage all 150 devotees in going out throughout the whole of New York City to distribute Prabhupada's books. And that was a wonderful service. I loved that service. One person would stay behind. Even the temple president went out. One person stayed behind. That was the pujari. And myself, just to support everybody that was going out. And I stayed up till everybody came back. And they were out till, you know, very far away places, so they wouldn't come back very late at night. And then there was one Hispanic devotee, Dominican devotee, that came every Saturday night around 12:15, 12:30, and would tap on the window, because he was a devotee that sold jewelry on the street, like a street vendor. He came at 12:15 at night to bring some lakshmi from what he had raised, the money that he had made during the day. And so he tapped on the window, because the Sankirtan office was in the basement. He just tapped on the window because all the doors were locked. And I went to the side door and gave him some prasada, gave him the latest Back to Godhead magazine. And, you know, we just had some exchange. That was my, how we, and you know, I finished my Saturday night book distribution program. And something that I meant, because it was up so late, I was given the service of cooking the sweet rice for the Sunday feast. Because we wouldn't serve sweet rice hot, it had to be cold, so we had to make it the night before, and then during the day it was put in the refrigerator, walk-in refrigerator, so for the Sunday feast it was cold. We always had sweet rice for the Sunday feast. Anyway, so I was thinking, as Prabhupada was explaining this particular service, this particular verse, or message, of that devotee, who later became a devotee. He was devoted, but it was just a simple thing that he was doing, but he did it with such purpose that Krishna accepted the service. So Prabhupada was describing in a lecture one summer that he was visiting, that Krishna is, although he is the supreme proprietor of everything, Krishna doesn't need anything. Krishna is Antaram. He's fully satisfied. But if anyone, and his Prabhupada's voice raised as I'm raising my voice, if anyone comes to the temple and they render even a very simple service, if they even turn one screw, Prabhupada said, Krishna is eternally indebted to that person. And when Prabhupada spoke like that, everyone went, Jai Prabhupada, in the middle of the lecture. And I was thinking, this simple devotee is doing this simple service. At the end of his day, he's fatigued, he can just go home and do whatever. But he came to the temple to get prasad and offer some contribution. Little association of devotees. Did it very faithfully. It became like a ritual. the end of the day, the end of this all day Saturday Sankirtan ritual. And in another circumstance was in Vrindavan, similar principle, the construction of the Krishna Balaram Mandir took long times of years. I saw Rukripa one time in Vrindavan. And he was very much involved in raising the funds for Vrindavan, and he said he lived in that guest house when it was being built. Prabhupada had 300 workers 24 hours a day, I mean in shifts, 300 workers total, 24 hours a day working on the building, finishing the guest house, because he was so determined he wanted it done. And the devotees would go to Prabhupada and say, "Prabhupada, isn't the noise keeping you awake at night? Should we have them stop at least while you're sleeping?" And Prabhupada said, "No, it is like kirtan. You know, bang, 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 bang. That is kirtan too." So when the installation of Krishna Balaram took place, from that very first day, there was a very simple Brijbasi lady that we didn't find out about it till later, but she just took it upon herself. No one asked her to do it. She took it upon herself to do this little service. She went and bathed in the Jamuna River. And after bathing in the river, she would fill up two vessels, like, you know, large pots, one for this shoulder, one for that shoulder, and carry those pots to the steps. Those of you that have been to Krishna Balaram Mandir, you know there's the outside steps, and then you come inside the temple room, and up a few little steps that lead into the Pujari room. So she placed on the two bottom steps two vessels of Jamuna water that they used every day for bathing the deities in their puja. And this went on for almost a year after the opening of the temple. And then one day she stopped. And so the devotees didn't even know who the lady was. She just did that simple service. And then they began to inquire, who was this lady? Traced back and found out from her family that she had left her body. So the pujaris reported this to Prabhupada, that from the very day of the opening of the Krishna Balaram Mandir, one woman has come and rendered this service every day. And during that time, things weren't well organized, because it was just getting underway, but she was there every day, just out of devotion. And when Prabhupada was told this story, and this woman has expired, in the assembly of the devotees, Prabhupada said, "For this very simple service, know for certain she's gone back to Godhead." Didn't comment on how many rounds she chanted, and so on and so on. He was describing her fixed devotion to the personality of Godhead. Very simple service. Not big fanfare, nobody even knew who she was. But because of that devotion, when any of the devotees here at the Festival of Inspiration in New Vrindavan share one word. Those of you that have been there, the morning programs are really wonderful. And the morning class, it's literally wall-to-wall stuffed, packed. And it's the largest temple in Islam that I know of. And on Saturday morning, it was three persons were giving the class. It was Dravida Prabhu, Devamrita Swami, and Ramaswar Prabhu. Ramaswar Prabhu had been a GBC member, BBT trustee, and guru, and left this time. And now he was coming back to a public function, first one. So he was sitting on the floor, they were sitting on chairs so that everybody in the audience could see them. And he refused to sit on the chair because he was feeling very humble. The theme of the Saturday morning presentation was can't is a word in the Fool's Dictionary. That was the theme. Impossible is a word in the Fool's Dictionary. It was the description of Napoleon. It's something the Prabhupada said. It was in relation to the publishing of Chaitanya Charitamrita, because Dravida was involved with the editing part, Devamrita Swami was involved in the production part, and Ramaswar was the BBT in charge. So they were describing what it was like to produce, you know, Prabhupada giving that 17-volume instruction. And it was things that I hadn't, you know, the history, the background that I hadn't heard before, including when Prabhupada was still, Ramaswar was describing this, Prabhupada was still in Hawaii, and Ramaswar and Hari Kesh had this kind of rivalry, kind of like, you know, a competitive spirit between the two of them, intense competitive spirit between the two of them. And Hari Kesh was the was Prabhupada's secretary, calling Ramaswar saying, "Oh, Prabhupada is really mad. You better be ready because he's going to blast you bad. You're so far behind in book production." Because they had found out, they didn't know, that Prabhupada was translating at a certain pace and also doing the Sanskrit work at a certain pace, because Pradyumna was not keeping up with his pace, so Prabhupada got ahead of him. It's turning into a Prabhupada. We have an evening, but that's nice. Once in New York, Prabhupada came to visit and personally witnessed. I was in the room when Prabhupada was asking Pradyumna how far he was in the Sanskrit work. And he was like a whole canto behind Srila Prabhupada, who was translating the commentary. And Pradyumna just had to translate the verse. And he was a whole canto behind. Prabhupada came very unhappy. And he let him know. And said, "There is lazy intelligence, but you are too lazy. A brahmana is supposed to be lazy intelligence, but not do nothing." He was very angry. So that night, Prabhupada didn't translate. He just worked on the synonyms for the verses and did a whole canto in one night. Intense. He was all of the work that was like half a year's work that Pradyumna was behind. Look, something had happened like that. The production department thought they were keeping up with Prabhupada, but it turns out that Prabhupada had already completed the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita and was now back to working on Srimad Bhagavatam. And he wanted, they were producing one volume every 2 months. Prabhupada wanted 17 volumes in 2 months. And their reply to Prabhupada was impossible. And Prabhupada said, impossible is a word in a Fool's Dictionary. So then they started, Ramaswar was describing, they started, well, Prabhupada said impossible is in the word, so there's a way to do it. So they figured out how to double up everybody's schedule. And even with that, it was, they could produce two volumes in a month instead of a volume every 2 months. But Prabhupada wanted 17 volumes in 2 months. And it was impossible. But it wasn't impossible because Prabhupada said to do it. So they went through this intense thing, calling out here and there. He described the events that took place just by their accepting that it was possible. People started to show up from the most amazing places. He gave one story of somebody, they were walking on the beach to chant their japa just so they could stay awake, because they were sleeping like 2 hours a night for 2 months. It was like humanly impossible, but it was possible. They were doing it. So they were chanting japa by the beach, and one man walked up and started a conversation with them, and they were looking for a particular person who could do a particular thing with art. And that's what this man did as a profession. And so Krishna just sent people because they accepted it was possible. There was this long, long description between all of them. Prabhupada wanted it in his hand, the final volume in his hand, by his Vyasa Puja. You know, it was specific. Before my Vyasa Puja. And he was in Vrindavan for his Vyasa Puja. And the person who was bringing the final volume brought it and handed it to Prabhupada after the Vyasa Puja ceremony. And Prabhupada looked at the volume and shook his head and said, it was supposed to be before Vyasa Puja. But then Prabhupada wrote a letter. This came at the very end of this like hour and 20 minute discussion about all these events leading up, you know, the exchanges with amongst the devotees. One of them was they had to produce paintings, a certain number of full color plates for the books. And the rate at which the artists would make paintings was, you know, it would take 3 or 4 months for a really quality painting to come out from a really quality artist. And they would put in hours and hours and hours every day. But they had to have 17 times 8 paintings. And they didn't have that many artists. So one of the primo artists was Friction. Those of you that know artists know that artists don't like people messing with their art. So there was down to a deadline to have the color plates sent in for a particular volume, and Prickshit was up like 2 days straight, and he hadn't completed. So somebody volunteered, they would go and finish the art. So while he was sleeping for 2 hours, they went in and finished the painting. And when he came in and saw the easel and it was finished, he was in a rage. Ramaswamy was describing. And Prickshit has a really big, well-built body. He's not like a skinny guy. He's powerful. He came like a bull, like a maddened bull, running into Ramaswamy's room at 2 o'clock in the morning, threw open the door, and there was another devotee, and Sringananda or somebody else was sitting next to him, just, you know, working out some details over the production. And he came charging at him, and Ramaswamy said, I thought, this is it. My life is over. But I think in the Prabhupada service, I've been sacrificed. And just as he reached the edge of his desk, one of those desks that you sit down at, Prickshit stopped and just fell to the ground and paid his obeisances. He checked his anger. And recognizing, you did what you did with just that devotion for Prabhupada. But the end of the whole presentation in New Vrindavan, Devamrita Swami read the letter that Prabhupada wrote. And the letter that Prabhupada wrote was, Dear Ramaswamy Company, for all of the service that you have done to assist me in this production of my books, I know that enormous sacrifice and effort has been made on my account. And Krishna will surely, for this sacrifice, you will all surely go back to Godhead at the end of this life. And that room full of devotees in New Vrindavan roared you could feel Prabhupada's presence. And it was like a standing ovation for a full 5 minutes. And how wonderful. It was like, you know, receiving Ramaswamy back into the fold of ISKCON. It was the mood. And to this day, he's continuing to resume his former Krishna conscious activities. The message is Krishna becomes very grateful for whatever service we do, if it's rendered with sincere devotion. It can be the most simple. It can be the most spectacular. But it's not just the volume of service, it's the sincerity and the surrender and the devotion unto Krishna. When one, because just as Bhishma Dev says, for one who is his unflinching servitor, what does flinching mean? Like let me serve Krishna. Oh, there's some difficult circumstance and pull back. But no difficult circumstance can stop pure devotion, unalloyed devotion. One who is Krishna's unalloyed devotee, Krishna gives himself that person. He places himself at the care of that devotee. And a devotee, because they're an unflinching servitor, they're not thinking, oh, now I can control Krishna. It's just out of love. But the love that Krishna feels with that devotee is, he places himself at their service. That's the master that we're serving. The master that we're serving is not an angry God that if you don't chant your rounds, yearn or something like that. You don't. That's not. Sometimes that reasoning is given, a kind of convincing, compelling someone to serve. Nor should we compel our friends or family members or others, you know, if you don't, you're going to suffer. Although that may be true, that's at the platform of attraction to Krishna is his loving nature. One who can understand the loving nature of Krishna will simply want to serve Krishna. And the more we serve Krishna with sincerity, we will feel that attraction to Krishna and Krishna's responding, Krishna's reciprocation. Hare Krishna. Any
questions? Yeah. Sure. I've always heard this word part and parcel. Why is this parcel word used there? Any, I was reading Bhagavatam and I came across somewhere, but I forgot now.
It's a British term. I can't say too much about it. Part and parcel is indicating the same thing as we might say in simpler languages, being a part of a whole. Part and parcel term indicates there's a whole and this is part of a whole. That's my understanding of the connotation of part and parcel. Within the phrase is reference to the whole as well as to the part.
In this particular chapter, Vishnu Dev waits till auspicious moment to arrive of Uttarayan,
yeah,
and then he decides to leave his body.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, what happens when a devotee leaves the body in an inauspicious time or circumstances?
If their mind is fixed, there's rules that apply for those who are not in pure devotion that do not apply to those who are in pure devotion. Those that are situated in pure devotion, those rules no longer apply. Bhishma Dev is setting an example for people of his particular age, and for people of his particular age who were not pure in devotion, the time of passing becomes very important, as is described in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. When is that auspicious time for leaving the body to attain? Follow that rule. Although he didn't have to follow that rule, he followed that rule. Otherwise, we would have in our disappearances of great acharyas, they would not return to the spiritual world because it wasn't that auspicious time. Yeah. Not so.
Thank you.
He told me that Krishna taking the chariot wheel onto Krishna. He took 3 months and but still he was not able to meet them. As if, one painted did the whole
thing. Well, When I first joined the Boston Temple, they had a production system. Bharadraj would sketch. He was like the creative one. And then Jadarani would paint. And Muralidhar would do all the details. But it was just they went through the production assembly line like that. Not one was the author of the entire painting. And they used that same system for the Chaitanya Charitamrita, for some of the artists, except for their primo artists. One of them. But whatever happens in a devotee's life, earlier, what's the qualification of earlier? Why are you using the word earlier? Is it important for this question? Okay.
So that's done. I mean, it's not...
Okay. If I've understood your question correctly, to be engaged in devotional service means to be under the care of the internal potency of the Lord, as opposed to not being engaged in devotional service, one is under the care of the external potency of the Lord. So, when one is in the internal potency of the Lord, when one is engaged in devotional service, that internal potency is the mercy of the Lord. Whatever happens is the mercy of the Lord. That means the law of karma is not ruling. When something difficult comes, it's not because of karma for a pure devotee. Let's say Sanatana Goswami contracted a disease of weeping sores. It wasn't his karma. It was a plan of the Lord. Raidas Thakur later disclosed that. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu raised it specifically for an intimate exchange of love with Sanatana Goswami and then cured the sores just by embracing him.
Till the point we begin.
That's right. Well, because one before one's a devotee, one doesn't even think of life in terms of the plan of the Lord, the will of the Lord, or anything. I'm thinking like that, just by definition, or by their spirit.
He's only touching about the Swami Ki.